This hour by Frederick Remington, fully cooked, ready-to-eat bacon. Exclusive, no refrigeration, 10-year extended shelf life bacon. The thickest media center-cut bacon in the industry at fullycookedbacon.com.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
This is a very important point that Chris brings up there, that if E.T. is thousands or hundreds of thousands of years ahead of us, would we even recognize the products of their technology? Is it at all possible that what we think are UFOs, flying craft, spaceships, whatever we think they are not what we think they are? They're simply put there for our benefit. You know, they might be able to wink in and wink out of existence. Who knows what kind of technology they could have? What do you think, Thomas?
I think that we definitely could see advancements in technology that even make something like warp field propulsion seem trivial. But I don't see any reason that we need to believe that we can't trust our own senses when we perceive these things. These devices appear to be fairly exotic. They're not shaped like any kind of craft that we're aware of. And yet multiple independent witnesses will report describing the same thing. So I don't think this is all some kind of head game. I think that we're probably seeing what's actually there. We don't understand how it works yet. We have a really good theory on that, and we can't replicate it. But I really worry when we start questioning the input of our own senses, and especially when it's confirmed with like radar and trace evidence and multiple witnesses and that kind of thing. It does seem like we're dealing with something that's technological and solid. I think that we could do a much better job at collecting data about it, and that's why I'm so excited about Chris's two projects. We get kind of a blizzard of objections against the ETH. It can sound like a lot, and it can sound very compelling when you hear the one after the other, but when you take a look at them one at a time, they tend to crumble. Let's take a look at some of them. There's this trickster-like quality to them. Well, I think Jason had pointed out there are absurd things that humans do all the time. I don't see why any other intelligent life wouldn't do things that we would perceive as absurd. But there may be extra dimensions to it as well. I mean, we've got psyops going on right now all over our planet by our own intelligence services that confuse people and mislead them and obfuscate the truth. And these devices and these beings don't seem to want to be detected. They certainly haven't made any effort to communicate with us publicly. So it wouldn't be a stretch to think that they would also employ sophisticated psyops operations to keep us confused and unaware and of what they're doing and why. I guess we're not that aware of our own culture of psychological operations, but it is going on. The Edward Snowden leaks gave us some amazing documents that were chilling at the scale and sophistication of psychological operations just from our own governments. So an alien race that could have the technology to make it here to the Earth, they would probably have that same understanding and know exactly how to confuse the issue if they didn't want to be discovered and confronted. Another thing that often I think we forget is that if there isn't an alien civilization which can explore the stars fairly freely at will, we're not going to be the first destination on their itinerary. They probably have experiences with any number of living planets and any number of even intelligent life forms. And so they should probably be fairly sophisticated about how they go about what they're doing, so they're not going to make some rookie mistake like jumping off a UFO and suffocating in the oxygen atmosphere. We may also not be seeing biological life forms. We may see an engineered synthetic life form. We don't really know what these creatures are. You know, these most exotic scenarios tend to be the least common. I think we're, you know, there's probably 100 UFO sightings for every close encounter experience. And so I think that we'd be best served by focusing, isolating our attention on the things that we can prove and bringing scientific instrumentation and exploration to that investigation.
Totally agree.
Robert, what's your impression of this?
I don't know where to begin first, to be honest.
Well, I'll tell you what, let's start with A, then B, then C.
Yeah, and go from there. So one, the percentage of cases that are close encounter in cases are around about 10%. And in Jacques Vallée, with Poehler's kind of conservative estimate, close encounter cases that have taken place just in a 40-year period, he's identified 14 million close encounter cases alone. So if you want to multiply that by a factor of 10 to get to how many UFO, you know, sighting pieces, we're talking 140 million, so the sky should be littered with them, and we should be able to record them fairly easily, but in fact, that's not the case at all. And then to go on with the notion of the nature of the technology they've got, I always see an inherent paradox in this. They've got the capacity to travel the stars, and then apparently they can perhaps create synthetic versions of life forms to interact with us. Well, why even bother doing that? You can collect whatever data information you want with a tiny little nano probe that will give you all the info you want. You can invade our bodies if you like and get whatever clusters of cells that you need to have to perform real science if you'd like. But the notion of the retro kind of medieval tortures that people are put through in abduction cases does not speak to any kind of scientific community at work. There are real projects. It's something being put on for our show. We can even go to the Betty Barney Hill case and look at the pull-down screen with the star map. I mean, this is ludicrous. This is something that is done for our benefit, or as Mike pointed out and Chris did as well, that we obviously are bringing something to the dance, and that goes to Greg Bishop's co-creation hypothesis, that we're obviously very involved with creating the lexicon to describe what we see, and perhaps that accounts for the variance in surreal nature of some of the appearances of these characters and even what they're up to. Because the notion that they would have to make 14 million touchdowns to collect some data from us makes no sense. Why even bother appearing when they can do that completely remotely if they've got the capacity to travel like this? So I don't think that's reasonable at all. I think that's very unreasonable thinking. And if anything, it points to the notion that something else is perhaps steering the rudder that makes us want to see this as an extraterrestrial event. Both the government has done a lot of work and investment in wanting to steer us in that direction, and it seems that the UFO sightings themselves also want to point in that direction there to us. And that's why I suggest that perhaps it's not a parsimonious piece, as Marduk points out, but that really reality is far more complex than we imagine it to be, and that what's taking place might be far more complex. And even the very act of seeing, or be able to make the statement that seeing is believing, or that we can trust our senses, is also a very limited piece when we think about it. So we have limited frequencies that we can hear. We have limited spectrums of light that we can see. The notion of, are we the only tenant in the building? We can't even see half the tenants that are floating around in front of us. And while some of those may be detectable by our own science, we also have to make room for the fact that another technological civilization may have visited here a very long time ago and set up shop. And they are, both in their technology and our perceptions of them, something that is beyond our even perceptual capacities.
The military, you say, is interested in conveying the impression that UFOs are the result of ET. Is that to mask what they're doing?
Well, perhaps. I mean, we know from, you know, Greg Bishop's work, we know from Mirage Men, we know from the silver screen saucers, that the role that the powers that be have played in wanting to kind of steer the narrative has been an ongoing piece. And whether that's for purposes of psychological control or Cold War tactics and strategies, maybe just seek out information and want to know what the UFO community is up to, etc. I think we need to pay more attention to the fact that they very consciously spend time leaking out information. They seem to celebrate and enjoy and laugh at the whole disclosure piece that we, you know, love to entertain ourselves with. And the fact that Tom DeLonge's piece has an entertainment component attached to it speaks again to the notion that let's not take this phenomenon too seriously. It's just aliens invading, and at the end of the movie, we always beat them anyway, so nothing to worry about. And it seems like that narrative has really inserted itself as a 1950s narrative, and we haven't let go of that one because it serves somebody's purpose. But it certainly doesn't answer the hardcore questions of what takes place inside of close encounter cases, or why the frequency of them is at the level that they are, or why even the diversity of things that people see or experience, or even how goofy some of them are, that they can't even, you know, capture a guy in a tree, or send out, you know, sea mines to try to get the poor, you know, retired vet from Detchmont Woods brought into the Mirage-shaped ship. These things are beyond strange, and they don't make sense. And really, if they are that advanced, why even bother appearing to us? Why not just keep it mysterious? As Chris said, there's a theatrical component to it as much as there's a shy component to it, and I think it's actually a very complex phenomenon, and I don't think the ETH actually can answer to the degree of complexity of both human perception, memory, consciousness, and what's being reported in terms of what's taking place when people get up close to this phenomenon.
And you're not even mentioning literally hundreds of different types of appearing craft. There's flying snow cones, there's flying dumbbells, there's almost every conceivable shape that you can imagine at one point or another has been reported as flying through the air and freaking somebody out. All the different entity types. I just have a very, very difficult time reconciling that and the idea, you know, of course, Fermi's paradox.
The Great Debate on the ETH with Gene and Chris and a bunch of guests. You're in
the Paracast.
Neighbors, we've made such a deal with HelloFresh, and it means that everyone listening to this show can receive $30 off your first week of deliveries when you go to HelloFresh.com and use the offer code PARACAST30. You know, with HelloFresh, you can choose the delivery day that works best for you. They've got a wide variety of chef-curated recipes that change weekly. And can you imagine me cooking Japanese panko chicken? It makes me feel like I'm a chef. It means also that you could actually get your meal cooked in 30 minutes. For busy people, this is perfect. The simple recipes include step-by-step instructions so even I can figure it out. Go to HelloFresh.com, use the offer code PARACAST30 to get $30 off your first week of deliveries. HelloFresh.com.
Sometimes life can be a pain in the neck or back or shoulder. Long distance travel or long hours in front of a computer can take its toll on your body. Why take another pill? Treat your aches and pains with Sunshine Pillows. Microwavable heat wraps, heatable neck pillows, and extra large body heating wraps. Sunshine Pillows and wraps are designed better for perfect support where and when you need it, even while driving. Sunshine Pillows are designed with your comfort in mind, will not burn you, and will stay balanced on your body to provide soothing hot or cold therapy to treat temporary or chronic pain. And the best part, Sunshine Pillows start at just $20. Join hundreds of our happy customers and see why Sunshine Pillows has a lifetime 100% positive rating on both Amazon and Etsy. Click sunshine-pillows.com and take the Sunshine Pillow Challenge. That's sunshine-pillows.com.
This just in. Before your doctor gives you another antibiotic prescription that you don't want, get this free report, The Miracle of Garlic, Your First Home Medicine. This free report is filled with easy kitchen remedies for common colds, flus, sore throats, ear infections, and more. Plus, learn to boost your immunity before you get sick. Go now to GCNwellness.com. Just like it sounds, GCNwellness.com to get your free report, The Miracle of Garlic. Click GCNwellness.com.
Does the current world crisis in North Korea or our domestic crisis right here in America concern you? Well, I know it concerns me. My friends over at Legacy Food Storage have solutions in the event there's the inevitable. What's the inevitable? Civil unrest, a run on your local grocery store. And here's my question to you. If this happens, how do you feed your children? How do you feed your grandchildren? Legacy Food Storage has the solutions. In fact, they can help you implement a simple plan to take care of your needs in the event of the inevitable. By calling them right now, I have authorized them to give you a special 20% discount at checkout by simply using GCN. Call 888-543-7345 or visit them at legacyfoodstorage.com. That's 888-543-7345 or visiting them at legacyfoodstorage.com. Make sure you use GCN at checkout for an incredible 20% discount. Don't be a victim. Take control of your life now.
You haven't experienced yogurt until you've tried Amasi, embodying health and flavor in a true whole milk, green-fed dairy beverage. Every sip pays homage to our old-world cows and the ancient culturing methods their milk benefits from. With over 30 probiotics, Amasi's undeniably nutritious, refined, cultured sensation bolsters your health and awakens your passion for dairy. Amasi's so good, and you need to try it. Contact your Youngevity distributor or call 877-878-4203 or go to GCNteam.com.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
The discussion is focusing primarily so far on Robert and now Thomas.
Robert was saying that there was 14 million to 140 million close encounters cases. Well, Jesus, show me the proof. You know, we've got plenty of evidence that we've got objects sighted in the skies, but we can seriously conclude that 14 million to 140 million close encounters cases have actually happened? I don't think so. You know, I think that when you start throwing in these kind of facts and putting them all under one umbrella, you get into some real trouble because no one hypothesis is going to be able to explain the entire range of exotic human experiences.
So what I said was, is Vallée's estimate, mathematical estimate, information scientist that he is that there's been 14 million close encounter cases over the course of a 40-year span. So you can read that paper. It's an online one and pretty popular pieces. He walks you through the steps. But if we recognize that close encounter cases are 10% of the UFO phenomenon, then we've got to multiply those 14 close encounter by another factor of 10. And that means there's 140 million UFO visit pieces, which means that they're all over the place. And that, in fact, is obviously not the case. And that, so I think that's where things get problematic on that level.
What is he qualifying as a close encounter? Is he saying that they're seeing an alien being? Or
understanding is 500 feet, right, within an object.
Oh, okay. I thought you were referring to, like, seeing a being, like in Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
No, that's a separate piece, but that close encounter piece is 500 feet within an object, and we've seen that whenever we get closer to it, so when you talk about those radar pieces, we still don't know what that object is. I don't even care about where it's come from, but we don't know what it is, whether it's a ball of plasma or who knows what's taking place there in the sky. So yes, we're getting a radar piece, cluster of birds, whatever it is, and we just know that we've got this odd thing that's there, but we can't really name it as something until we do thorough investigations. And I think one of the great pieces that plagues the history of ufology is bad data. And again, Vallée, who with his Capella project, you know, tried to take all these warehouses of data and work with it, and he said it's impossible. You just garbage in, garbage out. You don't have consistent collections of data when you go from country to country, or even within a country like America. You've got all kinds of different kind of data reporting pieces, and often the investigation of the case stops with a witness report. And so his most recent speech at Contact in the Desert was fascinating, because there he went through a series of different cases that on the face of it look like phenomenal UFO cases, but when they are investigated a little bit more thoroughly and with great detail, with the resources that, you know, somebody like the CNES in France could do, suddenly the case breaks down as something totally mundane. And we have to ask that question: how much of the data that we've got that are these incidental reports here and there that have never really had total thorough investigation applied to all of them, how much of that data is even useful for us?
I couldn't agree more. And that brings us to a really critical point that's often raised in this debate. After 70 years of UFOlogy, the ETH still hasn't advanced the field to understand the nature and origin of these experiences.
I love that.
But in reality, just like you said, we've never, ever had a focused scientific investigation using the right equipment, using trained professionals in an organized, systematic way, like science studies everything else in the universe. So until we have that, we are working with pretty much loose data sets. So we need an effort to do that, and that's why I'm so excited about what Chris is doing, because it's actually the first really legitimate scientific effort to collect scientific data about the things that are happening in our skies.
I agree with that 100%. As Vallée likes to say, we haven't yet done the basic science on this.
That's right.
So how can we properly talk about it then if we haven't done the basic science and yet make all these assumptions about what's being seen? It's exactly as the witness reported it. We haven't really done the proper investigation piece. And I think when we do look at, you know, the cases where we've done thorough investigations, and, you know, whether it's Kevin Randall's, you know, going back to revisit cases now, or Vallée going back to revisit cases, what we start to see is that things do break down, and suddenly mundanity appears at the end of the line. So the question is how much of the ETH scenario is a myth that we have constructed for ourselves based on storytelling? Storytelling from witnesses of the experiences that are outlandish, dramatic, and the majority of which are entirely single-person cases. The number of cases that are two or more after that goes down by about a third. And then after that, cases where it has multiple witnesses, these are very, very small in number cases. So the majority of what we know and think we know about the UFO phenomenon comes from a single individual reporting, and we want to believe that everything that they saw is accurate, when we know that there's a lot more that goes on when it comes to seeing. And when we start talking about the close encounter world, we know that there's obviously a lot of other things that need to be examined in terms of the nature of that individual, of their state of mind, of what's taking place. I like to think of the UFO, you know, close encounter piece as a set and setting event. What's the mindset of that individual, and what's the setting that they were in? And maybe we can draw a lot more information about the phenomenon when we start looking at it from that perspective and start scrutinizing that individual who's done the seeing in the first place.
The multiple witness sightings cases might be a minority, but what they tell us is that almost unanimously, people see the same thing when they're witnessing these things. I'm not aware of any cases where you had three different independent witnesses who saw three completely different things in the sky. Descriptions might be a little bit off because, you know, nobody's going to recall and perceive exactly the same features in exactly the same way, like with any event. I don't see gross disparities between the observations. I mean, maybe there are cases like that, but they don't seem to be prevalent enough to have made it onto my radar. So I think that that shows us that people tend to report pretty much what is witnessed in the sky.
Sure, and maybe when we do really good detailed investigations of that, we find out that they just saw, you know, a power transformer blew up or an overload corona on a wire, and sure, they all saw the same thing, but it doesn't mean it's a UFO. In Bud Hopkins' case, there's a group of people who are standing in the window looking at something very, very bizarre and surreal out the sky, and the one individual witness claims he had an abduction experience in that. When the group gets together years later, nobody can seem to actually recall the original event. A decade later, they all recall the event, but they start reporting different things. Memory plays a role inside these things as well, too. But I think the times that we see actual, you know, two or more witnesses seeing the same thing, I think those are actually are very critical cases. And we should throw a lot of effort into those ones to either track down mundanity or to identify with some clarity as to what's taking place. So I've talked to people where two or more witness sighting pieces, and those ones blow my mind. Like, those are the ones where I listen to what they have to say and I go, wow. Sounds like an alien from outer space to me, you know, and I think those are fascinating ones, and we should put more energies into it. But I think a lot of the other cases that often are highly dramatic and wonderfully theatrical seem to originate from a lone individual alone somewhere. Or in the case of Pascagoula, you've got two people there in Portage County. You've got multiple police officers. You listen to their tapes and the recordings that they've done right after the event took place, and you say to yourself, my goodness, that is the strangest thing that could happen to a human being. And it certainly sounds and looks like it's aliens from outer space that's taken place. Yet when we have to take that and add it up with all the other examples of it and just how prolific the phenomenon is, I think we have to scratch our heads a little bit and go, well, wait a second here. Not only is it too prolific, but the medieval retro technology that they appear to be using on us is also rather nonsensical. I mean, how many eggs and ovum and sperm do you really need to collect in the first place? And even now with our own technology, we can do that without leaving a mark on a person, not traumatizing them, not making a point of it in human history that it should be something paid attention to, because those theatrical medieval, you know, medical experiments are things that are being well logged here on the history of the planet, and they're invading our kind of our sociological culture in a way to say, no, here we are, we're here. They're not evasive at all in those moments. So I find that a little bit bizarre that we see both evasiveness when they're flying in the sky, but when they're down here on the ground, they're inserting themselves into our lives.
We got Mike and Robert and Jason and Thomas and Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Have you ever lost your power and wanted to simply flip a switch to get the lights back on? If so, pay close attention because huge discounts are now available in solar generators. Perfect for backup power outages and emergencies. Portable solar generators provide life-saving electrical power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, a solar generator runs quietly, emits no dangerous fumes, and produces an endless supply of electricity from the sun. It's like having an electric power plant running secretly in your own home. Right now, get a $5,000 solar generator for just $995 while supplies last. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more. That's MySolarBackup.com. GCN listeners, use coupon code GCN at checkout for this special offer. MySolarBackup.com. Use coupon code GCN. EMP protection available at an additional charge.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm
telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your 2-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
Attention business owners and independent contractors. This is a money-saving message from Tax Mediation Services. If your business owes $20,000 or more in taxes, we can help you today, right now. Listen, dealing with the IRS is no picnic. It's an intimidating and extremely stressful process, and you don't want to go it alone. Our attorneys know every law, every tax break, and every possible opportunity to help you resolve and reduce your tax debt. And if you owe more than $20,000, you may be at the top of their hit list. So don't take your tax debt lightly, because it will not go away on its own. The IRS can seize your bank accounts, your home, and even shut down your business. Call our tax experts today at 1-800-765-9681 and let us deal with the IRS while you focus on your business. That's 1-800-765-9681. Again, that's 800-765-9681.
It's been said, any society is only 3 missed meals away from chaos. Those times may be near. Think about it. Our country faces multiple terrorist threats and aggressions from Russia and North Korea. Social unrest and violent marches yet again may lead to looting of stores and city shutdowns. And a crumbling infrastructure leaves our power grid vulnerable to long-term outages from a single cyber attack. When the chaos from any one of these threats arises, the government knows it can't provide during a widespread national emergency. That's why you need your own plan for self-reliance. That's where My Patriot Supply comes in. Get a 4-week survival food supply for only $99. That includes breakfast, lunches, and dinners. Order online at preparewithgcn.com. $99 for 4 weeks of survival food that tastes like homemade cooking and lasts up to 25 years from My Patriot Supply. Get your kits today at preparewithgcn.com. Free shipping is included. Preparewithgcn.com.
Clark, author of the UFO Encyclopedia and other books. You're listening to the Paracast.
Listeners, if you want to get the After the Paracast podcast and the version of this show free of network ads, subscribe to the Paracast Plus. Go to plus.theparacast.com for more information. plus.theparacast.com. We've got Thomas Morrison. We've got Jason, Robert Brandstetter. We've got Mike Jones, who has a few things to say. Mike?
Yeah, so thanks, Gene. Humans tend to see through the filters of their own biology and their own singular worldview. We're the only, you know, tool-using, energy-exploiting species on the planet. And so when we talk about ET, we tend to lump them all into the one umbrella, the one basket. We tend to look at the motivations in a singular sense. When in actual fact, the model, even just looking in our local neighborhood, the galaxy, favors multiple species, multiple visitors. The idea that the craft all look different, well, that's entirely consistent with the current model. It's right. far more complex than one species of ET visiting us with one set of motivations and one set of goals and everything else. We also have a problem with time scale. You know, human beings look at dolphins and we see an animal that lives in the water, but when you actually look at the dolphin critter itself, it started off in the water like all life did. Then it moved onto the land, and then it moved back to the water. And I mean, most people, they don't grasp that the time scale involved, that the bigger picture involved, that we tend to look at things through a tiny little narrow worldview, and then all of a sudden things don't make sense. You know, the reality is it's very, very complex, and the model itself favors multiple motivations, multiple species. Yes, some of them are able to breathe our air, maybe because they've bioengineered themselves to do so. Some of them may just stay in their craft, you know, and not come out at all. Some may send probes, some may not. We could be dealing with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of different species.
That's right. There is roughly 40 billion Earth-like planets in the habitable zone of their parent stars in the Milky Way alone. So even a noticeable fraction of that were to evolve intelligent life, we could be awash in a sea of a myriad technological civilizations all around us, which would be fully consistent with what we're seeing.
And because we're a singular species here, we tend to look at the whole thing through a singular species viewpoint. We try and find some common motivation, some common reason why they're here or why they're not here or what they're doing. But the reality is that the reasons and the behaviors can be spread across a broad spectrum of species.
Yeah, and the human species has only been around for about 50,000 years. We could be dealing with civilizations that are hundreds of thousands, millions of years farther along than we are. Trying to understand their motivations and their technology would be, you know, incomprehensible to us. And they can be anywhere in between. It's fairly reasonable to expect that any civilization would want to send physical craft to visit other planets to collect data. The most effective way to do it. You need to be close to something to study it clearly.
Absolutely.
I don't understand that, I guess, that line of thinking particularly, knowing that the way that we're looking to try to explore space now is not by investing a lot of money into a singular craft that we hope makes it through, you know, whether it's radiation belts or incoming meteors, etc. We seem to be designing technology that is far more on a much smaller scale and is more efficient at sending back information. And again, if we're talking about an advanced technological species and we take a look at the direction our own technology is going in, and this was one of the pieces we talked about on the thread, you know, the notion of using a nano or a very small micro technology that can self-replicate and design itself along the way and send data back saves a species a lot of resources, a lot of risk, a lot of danger. There's no reason to send a life form out there. And if we're talking about societies and cultures that are hundreds of thousands or millions of years old, we would like to think perhaps that the value of human life or their own alien life would be so significant and the mortality so significant. Why bother risking traveling off somewhere else when all the information that you need to collect you can do remotely and just have it beamed right back to you?
So sure, some of them may be doing that.
Irrational about
that's
that.
Right. Yes.
Some of them may be doing that. We wouldn't even know it.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean they all had to do that. Some of them may actually be doing exactly that, and we wouldn't even know about it. They'd be sending nanoprobes down, collecting data, using stealth technology, cloak technology, doing whatever they want to, and we wouldn't even be aware of it. But that doesn't mean they all have to do it.
Again, that presupposes they're here to get data in the first place, or that data even involves the human society at large. I mean, they appear to be mostly disinterested in our civilization. They approach individuals, not groups or authority figures.
And it may be the biodiversity that's of interest to them. And we may be, a virus or a nuisance and in their minds detrimental to what they might consider to be an incredible, biodiversity that our planet has. So we may not even be the focus of the main attention. Let's put it that way. The main focus for some of them. Just looking at the abduction phenomenon and how watching Daryl Sims break out his jewelry case that he keeps handcuffed around his wrist and looking at all these objects in there and knowing darn well that some sort of nanotech device could probably, do anything that you could ask of it with our state of technology and instead of having things that look like, little miniature peas or finishing nails, chips of glass. That sort of thing. Again, it brings back the whole question of theatricality and why appearances are probably deceiving.
All observation is theater. The degree of theatricality comes into how strange it is what you're observing. All observation is theater.
And can I throw one thing out? I've witnessed that kind of theatricality there, Chris. What if we are secondary to the whole thing? If we as observers really have nothing or something tangential to do with whatever it is they happen to be doing at the moment, what they're doing may not make any sense to us at all. It may feel very, very theatrical, right? Or if they're not here for reasons that we would understand to be rational reasons at all, because whatever drives their economy or whatever reason they're here doesn't even exist, or we don't even understand what it is, maybe the theatricality is the goal that they're trying to do, right? Like, we don't know why they're here.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, yeah, and again, that brings up, the whole idea of the slow, non-predictable way that these encounters are taking place smacks of very effective behavior modification, a la Pavlov and B.F. Skinner and you know, people that have done work in that realm have found that unpredictability and some form of reward tends to work best when you're trying to modify behavior. And a lot of what I think is being described in the books and in case logs does suggest that we are being programmed. I think on a mass scale, there's some sort of behavioral programming going on. And again, that presupposes some sort of agenda along those lines. But at the same time, point well taken. We really, until we have something to go on, all we have is what is appearing at face value. And, you know, again, the point is well taken that perhaps that theatricality is more of something, you know, like the magician saying, you know, focus on my right hand while the left hand's doing the magical trick. So, you know, again, I just think it's inconceivable to me that, you know, after all this work that we put in attempting to detect signals out there, that it appears to be a big silent void, that we really haven't been able to detect anything that would conclusively indicate that there is intelligent life out in the universe right now. You know, I think Fermi is I think he's kind of the whole paradox is ringing true to me, at least.
I have a question to pose here, based much on what Chris said. If we're making all these efforts to listen to something, and we've got ET flying around the skies here, all over the place, all over the planet, a number of different ET races, and we'll get a break and then we'll get some answers from somebody, why is it that we don't pick up their transmissions? Is it because they're using some kind of method that we don't detect? They're using subspace radio and we haven't invented that technology yet? What is it? Why can't we hear them if they're talking to one another and we assume they should be, right? Gene, Chris, Robert, Jason, Mike, and Thomas, you're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First game Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there's The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at rockoids.com. That's rockoids, rockoids.com.
The answer to being in control of your own healthcare is freedom from insurance. Become part of a group of self-pay patients that come together to share in each other's medical expenses. Individual share amounts begin at $107 a month and $347 for families. Choose from three health sharing programs. Holistic treatments may be eligible for sharing. See guidelines. Discount programs available for dental, vision, and pharmacy. Go to libertyoncall.org. That's libertyoncall.org.
Looking for that edge during those intimate moments? We see many ads for enhancement, but the side effects include death. At GCN Team, we should change the Healthy Body, Brain, and Heart Pack to the Healthy Libido Pack. The brain and heart are not the only organs that require a healthy vascular system. For proper blood flow at the right moment, go to GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. That's 877-878-4203. That's 877-878-4203.
Water is the single most important thing your body needs, so you want to be sure it's the best for you and your family. Since 2005, thousands have depended on Berkey Purified Water. The Berkey Guy provides the lowest price filtration systems in every size. For incredibly delicious water now and in an emergency, get to GoBerkey.com or call 877-886-3653. 877-886-3653. GoBerkey.com.
Message and data rates may apply.
Warning. Texting while driving is illegal just about everywhere. So if you want to take advantage of a life-changing LASIK offer, pull over when you can, because a special opportunity is just one text away. The LASIK Vision Institute is offering absolutely free evaluations and dramatically low prices on high-quality LASIK. Text the keyword CLEAR55 to 350350 to get the benefit of FDA-approved LASIK technology that gives the majority of patients 20/20 vision for a fraction of what others charge. Text to schedule your free appointment to see if LASIK is right for you. When you text CLEAR55 to 350350, you'll also get an extra 20% discount off our already low-cost services. We've already performed over 1 million procedures. Today, it's your turn. Discover how you can get the quality LASIK experience you've always wanted for a fraction of what others charge. This great offer is just a text away. Text CLEAR55 to 350350. That's CLEAR55 to 350350.
This is Dan Pilla. Do you owe the IRS money you can't pay? Are tax debts crippling you? I've defended people from the IRS for over 30 years. I've helped thousands, and I can help you too. I wrote the book on IRS settlement, and I'm telling you, there's no such thing as a hopeless case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX to finally get free of IRS debt. With the IRS's new programs, there's never been a better time to solve your problem. Call 800-34-NO-TAX. That's 800-34-NO-TAX or my website, danpilla.com.
Hi, this is Joshua P. Warren, author of The Poor Man's Paranormal, and you're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
So I don't know who wants to take the question there.
I do.
Okay. You know, I think other than Mike, who has a very obvious lilt to his chatter, it's hard to know who was who. So who was answering?
Oh, that was me.
And you are?
Thomas.
Okay, Thomas. Go ahead, please.
Look, we only had about one century of widespread radio transmission technology, and we're already now gravitating over towards focused satellite transmission, cable, things like that. So that little radio era is a very brief period, even in our own history, and it's already fading out really quickly. And even the signals that we are transmitting, which are now much lower power, like cell phone systems and that kind of things, they've changed their frequencies dramatically from 50 years ago, right? Plus, there are other broadband and encrypted forms of communication that would be easy to use in any number of signal bands without being detected whatsoever. Also, people seriously overestimate the capabilities of SETI. If there was a SETI program around the nearest star system to us, Alpha Centauri, they would not be able to pick up any of the transmissions, the communications that we've created here on the Earth, because our signals are too weak and the distances are too vast. The only signals they'd be able to pick up would be high-powered radar, and that contains no information whatsoever. And at some distance beyond that, you wouldn't even be able to detect the high-powered radar. So SETI is not a very effective way to go, especially when you factor in the fact that our 100 years of widespread radio use is already fading out, and civilization would have to be going through that exact same type of technological development at the same time we are, essentially, in order for those signals to make it to us. Plus, they'd have to transmit them much more loudly and therefore much less efficiently than we ourselves have done.
And even SETI themselves have said recently, we may have been looking in the wrong places. We may have been looking based on the fact that we're expecting biological creatures like ourselves, so we're looking in habitable zones. If, in fact, the vast majority of the galactic societies are post-biological, they could be living in areas that we haven't even been pointing our gear at.
Right, or simply on spacecraft. I mean, once you have the ability to traverse the stars efficiently, there's no point in setting down on a planet. You should just stay aboard your ship and have a roving civilization.
Yep.
Well, the other question we have here is that with so many different alleged space beings exploring us, do they interact with one another?
How do we know?
How would we know?
I think that's good.
Right now, there's a space war going on. It's cloaked, so we can't see it.
You see, that's the other issue here, too. Wouldn't you think we have stealth technology. Wouldn't you think an advanced alien civilization could pretty much hide their travels here so we'd never detect it? Or is it a show for our benefit?
We run into those counts all the time. Yeah, I mean, there's been cases I've read about where people have seen what looked like a cloaked ship, like a distortion against the background sky, where they knew something was there, but they couldn't actually make it out.
They've been watching Star Trek too often.
No, I've actually seen that with a whole bunch of other witnesses, I might add.
Right. So it does appear to be happening. Plus, we have lots of visual sightings where we couldn't get radar confirmation. Now, maybe that radar was being withheld, but maybe it was just being cloaked, you know, using a similar type of technology that we use.
Well, it's the Romulans, that's all.
Well, and I just want to throw one thing out there. If they are capable of perfect invisibility, like witnesses have said, then why did they show themselves? Either they are doing it on purpose or they're really bad at it.
Or they don't.
Yeah, you're lumping them into one basket here. You're saying they as if they're one society or
fair enough.
That's right.
Fair enough.
To give you an example, it'd be like the guy that flies a single engine Cessna over a village in South America, and then the next day the Air Force flies a supersonic jet over it. Now to them, if they're going to look at those as singular, then they're not going to make much sense of the difference in behaviors and technology.
Mm-hmm. Fair point.
So if there's so many of those species flying around there and we've never seen them shoot down each other above our planet and fighting over whatever their economic gain or material or knowledge gain is for the reasons why they're here, then one should also assume there's some kind of collaboration at work there as well amongst them. And so that's then why not have the Federation come by and just drop off the little probe and send the data back to everybody? So again, there doesn't have to be this massive waste of resources and so many different and comprehensible number of humanoids that appear to be landing on our planet. I think one of the big problems with the ETH is that it's one of those theories that does start to write its own narrative, and it starts to chase its own tail and develop a way of thinking about things that creates its own mythology for its own sake. And I think that that actually is part of the misdirection, because I do see it as a phenomenon that's very concerned with misdirection. We talk about the idea of the trickster quite often, and it does seem to be leading us to want to think about it in a very specific and select way. And I wonder how much we are missing in that equation when we've allowed that narrative to be the singular one that's dominated, because when we look at it, we actually haven't collected a lot of information off that narrative. So while I'm not saying abandon the ETH, I'm saying maybe switching gears might allow us to see things from a different angle, different perspective, collect some better data than the narrative that the ETH writes, because we haven't gotten much from it at all.
How do we know it's a waste of resources? But you're looking at that from the human point of view on a finite planet with a finite set of resources. So from our filter, yes, that might seem like a waste of resources. It may be nothing in them. It may be a mouse's piss in the ocean to them to have a zillion craft.
Why bother visit us then?
It may be a post-scarcity kind of civilization where resources aren't really constrained. And I just want to challenge the thinking that perhaps they're collaborating at all. I mean, they appear to be disinterested in us as a society. Why would they be interested in each other as a society? Perhaps it's a group of individuals here.
Yeah, I think we get into a real bird's nest when we start trying to dismantle motives and ambitions and all of that kind of thing.
So
I mean,
do it.
Yeah, I have really very little interest in trying to do that, because it's counterfactual. There's absolutely no way to discern that, and all it does is muddy the conversation. I love alternative ideas and explanations, and I'm sure that there are many other very strange things that go on in our lives that defy explanation that have nothing to do with the ETH. But I don't think that we should lump them all together and just say, oh, well, the ETH can't be right because it doesn't explain this thing that I've thought up.
I'm not saying it's not right, and I'm not saying that it should be abandoned entirely, because it does make total sense in terms of all the things that we've been talking about. But when we add up all the data that we've got and all the evidence we've got, it doesn't seem to link up in a very happy way. It seems to point to a lot of other potential motives at work, and it seems like we're being led down that road to say, yes, it is aliens from space, and we shouldn't really worry too much about it because they're just beyond us anyways. And I'm just wondering, are we missing some data, missing information, when we keep turning ourselves to look upwards instead of looking inwards to see how much of this phenomenon belongs to us? how much of it is something that we've helped to create. There have been distinct patterns that we know just from the 1900s onwards in terms of looking at airships to Foo Fighters and balls of light literally nuts and bolts craft, as reported by people seeing actual nuts and bolts on the actual craft, to glass-shaped objects, to triangles, to platforms the size of football fields. And so there are these other kind of pattern elements that are there that don't really make a lot of sense when we think about the lexicon that we've used to describe these patterns that have taken place and the very distinct patterns that are known. It seems that we are very involved in the phenomenon. So when we keep looking outwards at the ETH component of it, we forget that there's a single human witness who is one of the greatest definers of the phenomenon.
But I agree. Everything you've said there is entirely consistent with multiple species within the ETH. You know, the different sorts of craft, the different types of craft, the balls of light, the glass-shaped craft, that's all entirely consistent with an ETH.
Sorry, Mike, you're saying like flying boats in the air, like airship mystery, with like cavemen to well-dressed British folk to Asian people to people wearing furs, that's like completely consistent with an advanced species that's coming to visit us?
Not necessarily. I mean, there's obviously also, you know, human beings tell lies and human beings trick each other. So you've got to add that to the mix as well. You've got to sort the wheat from the chaff.
What's the percentage there?
Well, it's very hard to tell. As I said, human beings love to play tricks on each other. Human beings love to tell lies. There's a famous cartoon that I saw years ago where one alien says to the other, "That guy saw us. What are we going to do?" And the other alien says, "Don't worry about it. These guys are pathological liars. No one's going to believe a word he says."
So how much is real? What should we study? Which is the good data?
I think I'll let Thomas answer that, because I think he knows the answer to that one.
Okay. Before Thomas delivers that answer, and we continue the debate, and I'm also going to ask, okay, whatever they are, how do we prove it? Which may be the biggest dilemma of all. With UFOs, we're, in our sense here, debating the possibilities that UFOs are really spaceships, or maybe not. Maybe there are other anomalies. Maybe it's a mixture of so many different possibilities with Robert, Thomas, Mike, Jason, Gene, and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
We also have swag. You know, we have all these exclusive Paracast things that you can buy. We've got like, I guess, 60 or so different items, and entails t-shirts, sleeves for notebook computers, iPad cases, mouse pads, the Paracast jumbo tote bag, all sorts of t-shirts and jackets and stuff like that for men and women. We have a Paracast aluminum water bottle. All this stuff, you go to store.theparacast.com, store.theparacast.com. What makes it special is that the items are the best quality, you know, great t-shirts, fabrics, and they have our official logo on them. That's what makes them special, in multiple sizes and colors. We even have stuff for children, stuff for women, stuff for men. We have all sorts of sizes, like small up to X large. A lot of good stuff. That's the swag from the Paracast. You go to store.theparacast.com, stop by, and take a shopping tour.
If you or someone you care about loves outdoor adventure, then check out slingbow.com for some unique holiday gift ideas. That's slingbow.com, where we have some innovative new products for the archer, hunter, or bow fishing enthusiast in your family. Now through January, use the promo code HOLIDAY to get free shipping in the U.S. or Canada. And from all of us at Slingbow Industries, have a safe, joyous, and peaceful holiday season.
Most people think life insurance pays after you're dead. That's true. But did you know you can have tax-free access to your life insurance while you're still alive? You can use the life benefits of your life insurance to grow your money with certainty and guarantees. No stock market risk, no tax risk, and no penalties. Call Life Benefits if you'd like a free book about how this can be done. Call 702-660-7000. That's 702-660-7000.